If you want a little show and you don't know where to go, put on your headphones and hit the mark.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to Hit the Mark with Mark Levy. This is your host, Mark Levy. Of course, giant thank you to Brad Temple and Jesse P.S. Both of those were great episodes recorded, and you guys seem to be really enjoying them, and I'm very happy with that, because, this is a weekly podcast, so, if you don't like an episode, that's a bad week, and I'm trying not to have my bad weeks. This is episode, actually, 192 of the show, which is insane to me. We're getting really close to number 200. Who is it going to be? I know people are trying to get Adam Sandler for the show. That'd be awesome. I would love Pete from Peter Pete on the show. That'd be cool too. Any of that stuff. I want a celebrity. It's all I want. Any celebrities out there, any connections to celebrities, new, old, whatever, I don't care. I would love to have a celebrity on the show. I think it'd be really fun for a good old number 200. That doesn't matter, but I mean, it does matter. I just want a good guest that's interesting and has anything. Email hmpod@gmail.com if you have any connections that, or are that. I mean, I'm Sandler. We know you listen to the show, so please come out and do the show. I'll put you up in a hotel, Adam Sandler. The hotel might be my apartment, but it will be a hotel. It's a very nice apartment in a very nice area. of course, there's so many ways to support the show. You can go to iTunes, rate us, review us. Today's quote for a free Hit the Mark shirt. So it would be, get Adam Sandler on. I will love this show. I love this show, but I will love it even more when Adam Sandler is on. And please have Adam Sandler on. If you write that, and also have the topic be Sandler, and you email hchimpod@gmail.com, you know what? You're going to get yourself a free Hit the Mark shirt. Yeah, that's how it works. And that's really exciting because, you know what, no one's ever taken up on that offer. There have been people that written reviews, have even come close to getting the exact quote for that, but never got exactly accurate, but that is fine. You know what, things are going to possibly change. We don't know. I just like you guys listening to the show. That's all I care about at this point. If you're happy, I'm happy. Another way you can support the show is, we have Zazzle. we have a store there. Just have to Hit the Mark. Get all the hats, shirts, mugs, whatever you want. It's all there. If it's not there, and you want it, I'll make it for you. A Galaxy S6 just came out. Want a Galaxy S6 case with the logo on it? Boom, I'll get it to you. It's that simple. Well, I'll get it, and you have to buy it, of course. That's how it works. You can also go hitthemark.podomatic.com, and you'll see all 192 numbered episodes and the 14 unnumbered episodes. That even include the bonus episode that was released 2 weeks ago, well, 3 weeks ago now for the 12-hour set. You can get all that and all that stuff on our website, hitthemark.podomatic.com, and you'll see a PayPal button there with all the episodes. Well, my God, my brain is so scattered today. This is terrible. This is going to be a fun episode. there's a PayPal button there. You can donate as much or as little as you want. And, it helps keep the show going, keeps it free, keeps it moving, keeps it exciting. Today's guest is Patrick Grizzard. So excited to have him on the show. I am beyond excited. Before I get to him, though, I have to do a quick film review. I saw the film True Story, a movie that I actually never heard of until, a week ago. A week from, our timeline, I feel like, because, so, around, middle of April is when I heard of the movie. It's got Jonah Hill, James Franco, and Felicia Jones in it. Well, Felicity Jones. All Oscar nominees. And basically the movie is about this guy, Mike Finkel, who is a New York Times journalist who does a lot of hard-hitting stories. He did not get something right, and then he got fired from the Times. And while that was happening, a man in Oregon was arrested and for a horrible, horrible crime that I'm not going to ruin. Said his name was Mike Finkel, and the reporter from New York Times. And it's a really interesting story. And the movie itself could be a little bit shorter. It's a short movie also. It's 100 minutes. But the acting is really good in this movie. If you're a fan of Jonah Hill, Felicity Jones, James Franco gives one of my favorite performances he's ever done. And that includes The Interview, which is a movie that I adore that no one seems to like but me. But it is not a great movie. It hits the mark, but, like, barely. Like, I don't know. There's something off about the movie. Like, it just... I liked it. I will say this. I liked it. It hits the mark. But, yeah. It could have been better. Yeah. So, today's guest, I am so beyond excited about, because this episode is going to totally hit the mark. Yeah, I just used that phrase. You know him. You love him. He's on the Indie Giant Team Centaur. He's also on the Rising Indie Team Fallen Socks that I... as you're aware, I'm a huge fan of, because I'm on it, and they're also all amazing. The rest of the team's got to get on the show soon. He's also, I played two prob with him on Grizzly V Men, which is a fun team. Book us for your shows. We want to break out BYOT sometimes. He does a lot of characters and all that great stuff. The one, the only Patrick Grizzard.
Hey, man.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for doing it. You looked so awkward when I introduced you.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird to have people, like, list out all the things that you're doing in front of you. I was like, oh, yeah, that's me.
In a room that's pretty empty.
And in your living room.
Well, my roommate's hearing it, so.
It's nice. It's great. And I'm really excited to finally... I know I've been trying to get over here and do this. We only live, like, 5 minutes away from each other, but it took me having 2 weeks off of work to finally make it over here, so thank you.
And we're also working on some other things we're hopefully going to get done this two-week period, but we'll find that out hopefully see that eventually.
Yeah.
Because, like, we actually had a slight date when Gabby was getting ready to the show.
Oh, right.
Because I remember it was going to be 1 week you, 1 week Gabby.
Yeah.
And we had to... because you were so busy and I was busy and, you know, it happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? Better late than never.
Better late
than
never.
It's not even late, really, you know?
I mean, if I had held out long enough, I could have potentially been the...
last member of the team.
The 199, you know, right before 200.
Who do you want number 200 to be?
I mean, Adam Sandler would be a pretty good get. I don't know. I don't know if...
There's a small movement going for that. I did not start that movement. I just saw it, like, pop up one day, and I'm like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, man. I think you gotta like, push for the grassroots campaign.
Yeah.
To get him on there. Maybe if you find out, like, that he's in town, like, find out where he's staying,
you can
go, bump into him in the lobby.
I'm going to be getting a pretty interestingly big podcast host from L.A.
Oh, cool.
On pretty soon, because they're going to be in by BAM.
Oh, exciting.
For that Radio Lab.
Oh, yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Nice.
So I'm really excited about that.
Excellent.
I don't want to say who it is because there's no reason to.
That's fine.
Because it's not set in stone. But if you follow my Twitter feed, like 3 weeks ago, well, 4 weeks ago now at this point, you'll be able to hear it.
Okay. All right. Keep an eye out for
man.
It. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, dude. So how's your rainy Monday?
My rainy Monday is it's good because I'm here and I'm not at work. I have 2 weeks off of between jobs. My day job is I do user experience design, and I just accepted a new job, so I got like a little bit of a vacation here that I'm really excited about. So
yeah,
it's good. It's good. I'm having a good day.
Nice. That's good to hear, man.
Yeah.
Good days are good. Yeah, man, like I honestly, like, because I have a slight pang of a hangover, I know that you have a slight pang of a hangover, because we both had fun last night.
That's right, yeah, I went to BYOT last night.
And fucking awesome BYOT. It was a long BYOT for such a small house.
It was. There was a lot of sketch.
Yeah.
There was a lot of sketch.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was a good time.
Yeah, it's always a good time.
I've been, like, preaching the gospel of BYOT, more and more to people, and it's like, I don't know, it's funny, like, some people, I think some people go once or twice, and it's like, as an audience member, if you're not, like, into the sort of full community aspect of it, I think that's what's great about it, is it's like, it's this community, and everyone is extremely supportive, and you can put stuff up that's, you know, half-baked, or you can try, you know, some crazy shit with a new form or something. You can, I think it's, you know, it's like, you can fail there and have fun failing. you know, it's not usually fun to fail. Like, normally failures, like, it hurts. It feels, it's like, oh, that didn't work. And you feel like shit. And there, it's like, there's something about the, like, overall enthusiasm and sort of generosity of spirit that everyone has that's like, even if you go up and do something that's just, like, really bad, you know, it's like, it somehow ends up being fun. Like,
yeah,
it somehow ends up being, like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, because you have to fail, right? Like, you have to fail at things in order to learn.
Oh, yeah, of course.
In order to get better. Like, so it's important to, like, you know, what do they say? Like, fail early, fail often. And so
I never heard that, but that's a cool phrase.
I think that's a it's like a startup thing. Like,
okay.
Like in tech startups, they say that a lot. Like, fail early, fail often. And yeah, I mean, I think the same is true with comedy. And you gotta, like, you know, if you're gonna have to fail and fall and on your face, like, might as well have as much fun doing it as possibly can.
And, like, that's why, like it's so fun. Like, whenever I like trying to discover two prop teams I can do at BYOT. Like, I haven't done that in a while, but, like, for a long time, I was just like, yeah, let's, like, put me and someone else up there and see, like, what, like, I mean, we Grizzly Men started, I mean, we only perform at BYOT, like, maybe 5 times now?
Yeah. Handful times.
Yeah, yeah. One time we definitely came close to failing. The rest have been pretty successful, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You're talking about the
our
one
two
where we...
monologues scene.
Yeah, that was pretty weird. I think we were what? You were like some kind of killer.
I hijacked
detective?
A train and right. you were a detective, like, because you initially, like, I'm high on the trail. Like, you were, like, straight talk to the audience.
Right. Right, right. Yeah, I was like kind of like a hard-boiled detective,
yeah.
like monologue voiceover,
yeah.
Like it, describing how I was trying to catch you.
And I was like, and then I sit down in a chair and, like, literally just start monologuing myself as a crazy killer.
Yeah.
On a train.
Yeah, that was. I think it's tough to do improv when you're on stage with someone and you don't communicate with them or talk to them in any way. That was what we found out. That was the learning from that set of improv. But yeah, it was fun. It was fun to do.
Yeah.
It's fun to try stuff like that because there's certainly not too many other shows or stages where I would be comfortable to do something that wacky, you know?
Really? But, like, as in, like, two monologue scenes at the same time, or...
Yeah,
because
I mean,
like, because Fallen Socks has gotten very, very wacky.
Mm.
I mean, I'd say Fallen Socks is not a normal team.
Yeah, but I don't think we. Yeah, I mean,
we're smart wacky.
Yeah, I think we've. I don't know that we do things that are like where I would sort of question. What is this a good idea to even try? whereas, like, that's the kind of stuff that I feel
right.
You can try at BYOT.
Oh, totally.
You know, you'd be like, I don't even know if I really want to do this, but I'm curious to see what happens.
Versus only 5 minutes of the life.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly.
So. I mean, although I feel like it's, well, like, yesterday it was definitely not 5 minutes. I felt like yesterday was longer than 5 minutes.
Our set?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Last year felt longer, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe Pat just, like, depending on how many people are there and stuff.
And, like, his mood.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like...
Hopefully, maybe he found us entertaining enough to give us an extra...
We were talking a lot about The Simpsons. I think he's a pretty big Simpsons fan, so...
We were talking about The Simpsons last night?
No, last night was in Disney. But,
yeah.
The week before, we were talking about Clouds and how they're, like,
Simpsons
characters.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That's cool.
Well, yeah.
Nothing like talking about old improv shows, right? Especially ones that are, by the time people hear this, 3 weeks old and 2 weeks old.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
no.
1 week old and two, yeah, you know what I mean.
I feel like talking about improv shows is like talking about your dreams. It's like, it's like fascinating to the person who experienced it.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like utterly dull to anyone else.
Like I will admit this, it's really funny because... when we had to finally explain to Lindsay Bowling about the Costco set that we did in practice.
Yeah.
Where Joanne always brings that up.
Yeah.
I remember Lindsay being like, what happened to the set? Because, like, Lindsay Bowling joined the team so, like, a few months after we started.
Right.
It was just like, oh, yeah, this is what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joanne Bradley is such a big fan of that set. Which, it was a fun set, but
it was.
Only six people in the world,
well,
six-ish people saw it.
Yeah. Well, it kind of defined, like, what we were trying to
Well, we are trying
with our sets, which is like try to have it all kind of exist in the same world, or you know, kind of be like thematically and sort of thematically, or like all the characters kind of exist in the same in the same world. And
I mean, when I did Dreamboat like 2 weeks ago, like it wasn't all the same world-ish, but it was thematically definitely the same.
Yeah. Well, and that's we're still trying to find the sweet spot of like when we try too hard to put it all in the same world, then it doesn't expand enough. And then sometimes we expand it too much and it doesn't all fit in the same world. It doesn't all get tied together. So it's like still working on that like middle ground.
Well, it happens, right?
Yeah.
That's what like the first year of any a good improv team is. I mean, I know Centaur went through some growing pains, right?
Yeah. I mean,
and Centaur is a brilliant fucking team.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we've been together. We've been together for like 2 years, a little over 2 years, and we all met in 201 in Nicole Dressbull's 201 class, and we were originally the team now is myself, Amanda Hunt, Dan McGilvery, Matt Walsh, and Jason Sweeten.
So not UCB for Matt Walsh. We have to put that.
Matthew Walsh. Of the Long Island Walshes.
Not the Chicago Walshes.
Not the Chicago Walshes. No, Matt has apparently when he was in 401 with Morgan Jarrett, she would send out emails and accidentally
email UCB Matt Walsh.
UCB Matt Walsh. sending him notes that were it might have been his 401 notes got sent to.
That's hilarious. That's really funny.
But yeah, so the five of us have been together for 2 years, and we originally started with three other members as well. So we started out like as an 8-person team. And, over time with people moving away and other commitments coming up and stuff, it's kind of dwindled down to just the five of us. So, yeah, I mean, you know.
And that's a solid fucking five.
Yeah.
It's such a solid five.
Yeah, it's a really fun group. I mean, we all really like each other a lot and do a lot of stuff together outside of improv.
Yeah.
Go to, like, I don't know, what have we done? We've gone to New York Red Bulls soccer games.
That's cool.
And baseball games and stuff. So it's like, yeah, it's like, I don't know, I think that helps if you're on a team with people that you're actually friends with and do stuff with outside of improv.
Yeah.
I think we've done, less of that of late just because people are getting increasingly more and more busy. So we actually, it's interesting, I think, like, we stopped practicing regularly, maybe 6 months ago? Maybe it's not
right,
been that
long. Right,
so
I feel like it's happened, like, right before Fallen Socks got formed.
Yeah, it was right around that time that we kind of stopped, I don't know, like, maybe November, December of last year, maybe it was around the new year. Anyway, the point being just that we had been together for a very long time and had been practicing regularly together for a very long time, and then we did kind of decide that we wanted to just spend more time doing shows and less time practicing together. And the interesting thing about that was, and like we've talked about this, I think we all felt like our shows got a lot stronger when, like, ironically, like, when we stopped practicing together as much, like, our shows got better.
That's so weird. That's so funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that is. I mean, I think part of it, it's like, for all of us, for a long time, that was our only team. And so I think when you have, when you only have, like, one team and, like, it's like, you're putting kind of it has to carry a lot of weight. Like, you want that team to be good and to, have good shows and to perform well and blah, blah, blah. And so I think that, like, it's like a weird paradox where, like, that ends up, you end up putting more pressure on yourself or something.
Yeah.
So it's like,
That was me with, like, during Flint time, like, because, mm-hmm. like, oh my god, this team is amazing, and I'm so happy it's, like, my only team, and we worked great for, like, 10 months, and then, like, you know, it stopped.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was sort of what happened, was, like, as we all kind of, like, kind of gradually started doing more things and having other, you know, whether it's like sketch teams or other yeah. improv teams or whatever, doing our own stuff independently, it was like in a weird way that like lifted some of the like burden off of
yeah,
Centaur.
Yeah.
And so now it's just like we're just, you know, really, really excited when we get together and do shows together.
Well,
and
Wednesday, you guys are doing a show, which I'm very excited about personally.
Yeah. This is the
Improv
Bingo,
Bingo
show.
Yeah.
Improv Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't wait. I can't wait. I'm really excited. I love the premise of this.
It's gonna be really fun. Like my biggest goal is to make sure no one on the team is to see like what's on bingo cards.
Yeah.
Like that.
Oh
bingo,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because like this way you just do improv, because it's like such a wide, we cast such a wide net.
So wait. Can you explain? Like, can you explain the rules and how it's going to work and
all
everything?
Right.
It's,
so
it's
every
Improv Bingo, but
every audience member that pays a ticket or buys a drink, it's a dollar or a drink,
yeah,
gets a bingo card.
Okay.
What's going to happen, instead of it being like B12, G50 or whatever it is,
yeah.
it's going to be like everyone get in here, all people on stage, like et cetera, like stuff like that.
Okay.
Like attorney scene. Stuff
right.
like that. Like, it's just going to be over 100 bingo tropes me and Annie Wohler are putting together right now. And, like,
cool.
just literally, we're casting such a huge net. The free space is getting a suggestion.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, basically, if you get 5 in a row, you win a prize.
Cool.
Do
you shout out during...
No.
You don't shout out during...
I'm tempted to have that be, but it would be such a ruiner for, like, the three teams. We have such great teams for the show. I don't want to ruin that, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm sort of on the fence about that. As an audience member, I would want to be able to shout. I would be really excited and want to shout out Bingo. But as an improviser, I don't know that I want someone to.
But I think what's going to happen is because myself and Annie our teams are not performing.
Right.
So we're just like judging and like hosting the show.
Sure.
So like, what's going to happen is we have to have a final meeting because we still have to, you know. We have a lot of stuff that has to get done for the show before it gets up.
Yeah.
But, like, we have to decide if, like, the prize is going to be divvied out during the show or at the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, between... Well, we have character stuff between the teams and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So it might be best if, like, the prizes are afterwards.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's... Some of the prizes do involve characters.
Yeah.
Some of those characters, like, I'm very proud of the fact that Manolo Moreno is playing a bingo caller.
A bingo caller?
Yeah, he's our bingo caller.
Nice.
So, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about that later, of course.
Nice.
But it's going to be a really cool show.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Let's
fully dive in, man. We're teetering on the edge and
okay.
diving in, okay?
Okay.
So, like, what's your big, like, comedy and acting inspirations growing up?
I fully, like... just kind of fell ass backwards into doing comedy. I didn't...
I mean, like, you like movies. It's like...
Yeah,
comedy.
So growing up, I was like... I loved... You know, I would say, like, you know, my biggest... I watched a lot of stand-up, Eddie Murphy, you know, Kids in the Hall... SNL, I was a pretty voracious consumer of comedy
uh-huh.
growing up, but like it never occurred to me like that I would perform or like write like I don't know. I mean I liked creative writing, like fiction and stuff like that, and I did a little bit of that in like high school and college, but.
Yeah. You're just like a normal kid, basically.
Yeah.
Not like comedy, but not like, yeah, let's...
Yeah, no, like, I was not... I was like, if anything, I was like kind of a jock like, as a kid.
What was your sports?
I played soccer and basketball. I don't know. I mean, I was I was really into music and stuff, but like I didn't come from like my family is not like a, like I, there's no like creative people really in my family. Sorry, mom, dad. that's just the truth. I mean, like there's not a lot of now. My younger brothers, like both play music. My youngest brother Kevin is actually a really, really talented musician. He's releases a lot of his own stuff that he makes. You know, releases it on like Bandcamp and stuff.
Nice.
And he's like, you know, I think kind of like plays around with people in the music scene in Baltimore. But he's also a physicist, so he's not like, yeah.
So it's like his side job.
Yeah, right. He's a freak of nature.
That's awesome. Though.
He's incredibly intelligent and creative. But yeah, so like we kind of came to that stuff, like they sort of came to music, and like I moved to New York. So after I moved to New York after college, originally to go to grad school. This program at NYU called the Interactive Telecommunications Program.
Right.
And that's kind of a, it's sort of a like interdisciplinary program in technology, art, science, programming, you know, multimedia. It's a little bit of everything. It's a really, really, really fascinating program. But I got there and I very quickly realized that I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, and I didn't know, you know, they bring in people with you know, very diverse backgrounds. You don't have to have a background in design or computer programming or, you know, engineering or anything like that. The goal is to bring in people without those backgrounds and to, like, have them collaborate and learn, like, see what they can do with those with technologies.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was, like, I had been a history and English major as an undergrad, and I got there and I was just like, after a year, I was like, what am I doing? I can spend, plus this was like, I mean, so I'm old. Well, thank you. So this was during, like the web 1.0 boom. And it was like, well, why am I paying NYU all this money to learn what people, because nobody knew anything. You
right,
know?
Right.
You could easily get paid $50 an hour to just essentially teach yourself HTML at one of these, you know, like web 1.0 startups. So that was essentially what I did. I left after a year. I got a job like doing kind of like front end production work at this agency, and kind of made my way up, you know, through the ranks, and then I started working in user experience design, which is more kind of like one foot in strategy, one foot in design.
Yeah.
And I did that for a while. And then all of that led me to eventually go back to ITP 10 years later in 2008. And I went back and I did the program from scratch. I started from the beginning, did the whole two-year program. I graduated in 2010. And in 2010, I was really burnt out. Like, I was really super burnt out from grad school. I was exhausted. I was defeated because I had gone to grad school with this idea that, like, this is going to be the thing that was going to help me transition away from doing this kind of, like, mundane, you know, agency corporate bullshit type of work. And like really kind of establishing like my own creative practice as an artist, and you know, I didn't have any illusions that I was gonna have to stop having a day job, but the idea was that either my day job would get a lot better, it would be something that was more creatively fulfilling,
right,
or I would be able to kind of, you know, start to have some traction with my own artistic practice. And neither of those things really happened. And I found that, so this was 2012. I had been working for 2 years after grad school, and I still hadn't, like, really gotten anywhere, felt like I was getting any traction with anything. And that was when I signed up for my first improv class. And
okay.
I just did that on a whim. And I'm sorry if that was, like, a really long, rambling, non-comedy related part of my
life. I don't really, like, honestly, like, my whole thing is a lot of things is interesting. I don't care.
Okay.
It didn't sound rambling at all to me.
Okay, cool.
So, I mean, I'm, the producer and the host of the show, so I...
All right. Well, yes. As long
it's
as
all going to... This whole episode is going to be 15 minutes long, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But, can I ask a couple... Because I know you're from Virginia.
Yeah.
So what's like growing up in Virginia?
I grew up in Richmond, which is
a nice place.
Yeah, it's
you're the
very...
second guest almost in a row that I've had from Richmond.
Who's the other one?
Jesse P.S.
Jesse P.S.
He's a podcaster from Pod Awful. He's also a bit more of an older school UCB guy. But like,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I'll have to look him up. I wonder where... So I grew up like on the south side of Richmond.
Yeah.
Richmond's like very, you know, old south conservative place.
Which is hilarious because it's kind of a big city.
It is.
And
well,
the north?
Yeah.
I mean, officially the north, right?
No.
Virginia is the south, right.
Don't let people from Richmond ever hear you say that. They would be very, very angry.
You look so mad at me right now.
Oh no, I don't care. But I'm just telling you there are. I mean, it is. It's like kind of a very old, you know, like it's like that old Southern money, landed gentry sort of. And I mean, you know, whatever. It's actually turned into a cool little town.
I mean, there's a really cool art scene there. I know
there's
that.
A good art scene there. VCU, Virginia Commonwealth right. University, is a great art school. And that's always been there. And it's just within, I would say, the last, like, 5 to 10 years, like, really kind of, like, revitalized the downtown. They've got a great art scene there. They've got a good music scene. They've got good music venues for touring, you know, national touring acts coming through and bringing in more of that. They've actually got an improv comedy theater there now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm totally blanking on the name of it, but I went when I was home at Christmas with my family, and it was solid. It was funny. So it's like kind of, like, had a little bit of a boom, and it's turned into a cool place to live. But when I was growing up there was not a lot to do other than, you know,
go, like, old battlefields.
Yeah, right. go drink on the train tracks over top of the, going across the James River.
So it's kind of like Stand By Me, pretty much.
Yes, exactly.
Did you ever find dead bodies and stuff like that, or?
Never found any dead bodies.
That's good.
Never found any dead bodies. I think that's something we can all be grateful for.
Yeah, man.
It was kind of a cool place to grow up. I mean, as kind of your standard suburban upbringings go, it was pretty normal, but I lived on the south side of Richmond, like out in the county. And, yeah, I don't know, it was just like, you know, played soccer, played basketball.
What was your position in basketball?
I was like a small forward.
Yeah.
Like a three guard, like a three spot. As an athlete, I was always like, just good enough to make the team, but never good enough to really get a lot of playing time.
Oh, see, I was not like I thought I was athletic until like fifth grade. I used to play like in my day school. That was also my Temple. Temple Beth Elam had a basketball league that was actually pretty good. Like you didn't have to be Jewish to be part of it.
Uh-huh.
It was just a good like it was a good season and stuff like that. I remember one year I was on a really good team, like where we actually like got to the playoffs.
Nice.
One year I was on a really, really bad team. And one year my dad was an assistant coach and we did even worse than that bad team. I think I only did it for 3 years, I'm not sure. But like it was weird because like I never really scored. I rebounded it a couple times.
Yeah.
But like, I remember the one time I scored for the other team.
Oh no.
I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
That's
so funny. When I was growing up, like probably middle school age, I was on a team where, I didn't score a lot. I would score, you know, I'd score like maybe, like,
you know, 8, 9, 10 points a game.
Oh, that's so much more than most. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, literally, I would score, like, if I was, like, to figure out, like, what my percentage was, it'd be, like, 0.2.
Yeah.
And, like, rebounds, maybe 1.
Yeah, I mean, I might be giving myself a bit generous with 10. It was...
But rebounds, you got 45 a game.
Yes, that's right. As a 10-year-old, I was getting 45. I don't know that there was 45 shots taken in a game. But when I was, but my one, like shining moment at that age was, I forget the name of the team we were playing, and there was a guy on my team, a guy named, Trevor yeah. Spencer, who's a, like, very great athlete. He's a good guy. He actually lives in New York now.
Oh, cool.
I run into him every now and then, but he was, superstar athlete, and there was literally 1 second on the clock. We were down by 2 points, and like the play that was set up was like I was supposed to set a pick for him, and he was supposed to come around that to the elbow, and they were going to inbound the ball to him, and he was going to take a shot from there.
Yeah,
and they couldn't get him the ball, and time was running out, so the guy threw it to me, and I remember it literally, like, I barely had time, it just touched my hands, and I just, like, threw it like a hot potato, and it went in, and my dad came charging down onto the court, like, everybody, like, swarmed the court, my dad came down and, like, threw me up in the air, and that was...
You were actually a legend at sports, weren't you?
What?
You were like a legend in Virginia sports, weren't you?
No, I was like I said,
it was like a small like statue of you when you were a kid.
No. I did play. I was a decent soccer player. And I did play on a team. What's up?
What was your position there?
Sweeper.
Okay.
I played sweeper. I played defense, but like. That's not true. Like I played sweeper for a while. So I started out playing right fullback, and then I moved to on other teams that I played on. I moved to sweeper, and then I played stopper. We played a diamond defense, and I played stopper, and I loved that because I got to go forward and move forward and play offense a bit, and like especially like on corner kicks and stuff. Like I would come in and play offense, but. That was so much of my childhood revolved around soccer.
I was never good at soccer.
It was like all my friends that I ever made pretty much in high school, you know, going back to like when I my family moved to Richmond in fourth grade, like pretty much all my friends were people that I knew through soccer.
Cool
kids that I met playing soccer.
See, I loved roller hockey.
Mm.
I loved it.
Did they didn't have regular hockey in Florida? Obviously,
I mean, there's ice rinks and stuff like that. But yeah. Like, I never been really good on ice.
Yeah,
I literally even like when I go like Bryant Park as an adult, trying to like impress women, it doesn't go out that well in that regard. But yeah, like, roller hockey was my jam.
Nice.
I was not really good at it, but I had a lot of young aggression.
Yeah.
From being picked on for a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Good outlet for that.
Great outlet for that. And plus so many, like, you have, like, literally, I remember buying my first hockey, like, my parents buying me my hockey cup. And I was just like, what is this? Like, I just remember once I was playing a game, because, like, you're so, like, you're head to toe padded.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, once somebody hit me, like, right there, and I just, like, felt the pain of the plastic, but I felt fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, ha, 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 ha.
Oh, that's why I have this. Yeah, I never really liked football, I never really liked, baseball, but soccer and basketball were my things growing up, and I don't know. I'm like, it's one of those things where I feel like I tend to have, I'm like very all or nothing about things, and like,
same here with that. Yeah,
you know, when I played sports, it was like, that was my life and my identity. Oh, man. One time, so when I was in, how old was I? I must have been in, like, 7th or 8th grade, sometime in middle school, the team I had been on,
yeah.
the travel team, right?
Yeah.
Which you had to try out for. And all my friends were on this team, and that was like, I'd been on the team for ages, and it must have been like 7th or 8th grade, because I started playing in like 4th grade. And anyway, we got a new coach,
okay.
And I went to tryouts, and the tryouts were like essentially a formality at that point, or
right,
so
right.
we all thought. And I went and I got cut, and I was like devastated. I was so devastated, and I came home and I had like my entire walls were covered. Like I had one wall in my bedroom that was like covered with pictures from like on the one side it was all basketball, and the other side was all soccer. And I took the soccer, all the pictures from the soccer side, and I ripped them all down and like threw them all out.
Oh no!
And, like all the posters, like all my soccer posters, and it was like, that's it. Like, I'm done. I'm not a soccer player anymore.
And then you hang up, like, Allen Iverson posters. And, like,
what's that?
And then you hang up more Allen Iverson posters, and you're like, I'm good.
I think I eventually put some of it back up. But, like, I was, like, my thing, you know, like, even at that age, I was like, well, if I'm not doing this, I'm not this thing. I'm a fraud. I'm not, like, it would be wrong for me to have all these pictures on the wall of soccer
when
I'm clearly not a soccer player, you know? And so that all happened. And then, like, a week later, one of my friends broke his arm. And put back on. And he wasn't going to be able to play the entire season. And the coach called me and was like, all right, we've got a spot for you on the team.
Like, okay, Chris.
And then I was like, you know, I was so grateful, and I was like, so, you know, like I never took it for granted again of like being on the team.
Here's a weird question.
Yeah.
Cause you have like one of my favorite last names in the world. Did people call you like Grizz as a kid?
Or anything
like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, yeah, not as a kid, but, like, in, you know, like,
yeah.
in high school.
I'm not, like,
starting in probably, like, middle school.
Well, I mean, like, it's kind of like, for me, I've always been cursed with Marky Mark as a nickname.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, everyone calls my dad that, my mom even called my dad that because they met in college, and so that was like how she was first introduced him. So it's like, yeah, it's pretty inescapable. Everyone calls my brothers that. Yeah,
like you gotta hang out with Chris Chapman sometime, huh?
I know, man. I know
he's around a lot. I've seen him a couple times.
One of these days I gotta introduce myself and just say.
I mean, he's hard to miss. He's like 6'7".
I saw him at DCM like 2 years ago when they did the the 30 Rock writers did improv together, where it was like the actual writers and then the writers from the show.
Oh, that's
people
cool.
That played the writers on the show.
But he's not an actual writer for the show.
He's not, but he was in it. I don't know. That was the premise of it, but then it ended up being a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah.
As well. But yeah, I saw him at that, and I was like, should just go up and say, hey, you know,
Grizz, I'm Grizz.
One Grizz to another. I like what you're doing.
Well, if you want, I'll tag him in the Facebook page, like Facebook stuff for this. Maybe like, I want to see Grizz and Grizz play.
Wait, are you friends with him on Facebook?
I'm friends with him on Facebook, yeah.
Oh, all right. Yeah, sure.
I mean, I don't see him often. Like, I really don't see him often. I see him at, like, events at UCB, pretty much.
Yeah, totally.
Well, he used to come to, like, Gethard Show a couple times, too.
Oh, okay.
That's how we met, like, at Gethard Show.
Got it.
Hey, dude, I'm a fan. He's like, cool, man. Cool beard. I'm like, thanks.
He seems like a super chill guy. Seems like he'd be very
He's, nice. Like, one of the most chill people I ever met. The most chill person I ever met at the show is Wyatt Cenac.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I met Wyatt Cenac at the most recent Night of Your Laughs, and, I was in the front row, like, right in front of Wyatt Cenac, and, like, dude, like, like, he had, like, the greatest beard ever right then. I'm like, dude, great beard is a cool hair. And I'm like, fuck yeah. And then I had to take a photo with him afterwards because I'm like, I have to take a photo with Wyatt Cenac.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So you moved to New York because of for grad school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what was it like growing, like, to, like, move to, like, from Richmond to New York? Like, what's that like? What was that like?
Well,
Richmond's not a small town, but it's not a small, it's not a big town.
No, no. So I went to UVA undergrad, which is in Charlottesville, which great, is like just
yeah, it's a good school too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's obviously taken some lumps recently.
Well, yeah,
but, and you know, I mean, deservingly, I'm not a yeah. We don't have to get into that, but
of course,
I'll say I think that UVA could stand. There's some big cultural changes that it needs to make if it ever wants to really kind of attain the status of an elite institution that it seems to think it has.
Right.
I think it. You know, there's some like very deep-seated cultural things that need to change there, which I believe have to go back to do with the whole thing that I was talking about with Richmond being a very sort of old elitist southern, you know, gentry landed. But anyway, all right, I'm not going to pontificate about that stuff. Charlottesville is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful town. It's one of my favorite places in the world. Going to UVA was a great experience. I had a great time there. I loved it. And you know, the thing was I didn't really know what I wanted to do after school, and so I actually ended up sticking around Charlottesville for 2 years after I graduated.
Oh wow!
And I mean, it was fun. I didn't, you know, I mean, I was just kind of dicking around. I didn't really know what I was doing, but like, I worked in a record store for a while and
waited
tables.
And, I've always wanted to work in a record store.
Man, that was like my. I wanted that job. That was my dream job. Like all through college, and I finally got it.
Yeah, ever since like High Fidelity, I was like, oh man, that'd be awesome.
It was. I would say it was great. It was not a full time job. It was a part time job, and yeah. I had another more like full time job, and literally every cent that I made at the record store went right back into the cash register there, buying CDs.
That was my first time at Best Buy, when I worked at Best Buy in high school.
Yeah.
Like, I worked in the media department back then, which was like movies, DVDs, games. Yeah. And like, you know, of course it all went back in there.
Totally. Literally every cent. Because we had like a huge employee discount too, and I just bought so many CDs. It was great. It was a place called Plan 9 Records, and it was like name. Super hip, like, indie record store in, I think the first one was in Richmond, and then they had two in Charlottesville, and, like, maybe one in Harrisonburg, and it's still around, but, you know, obviously, like,
things have changed,
dying off, I was in Charlottesville for 2 years. I didn't really know what I was doing, and that was also why it was a little bit of, like, a Hail Mary of just, like, well, maybe I'll apply to this program at NYU. And then I got in and I was like, oh shit, okay, I guess I have to go. But it was, yeah, it was definitely a big change. I mean, I grew up, like I said, I grew up in the suburbs. Charlottesville is like this very kind of, you know,
college
town. Yeah. And so moving to New York was like a pretty huge change. That said, I always felt like, my friend Pete Chalakis, who grew up in Rockaway, and I went to school with him. I went to UVA with him, and he was always like, Grizzard, you're a New Yorker. You just don't know it. he was right. I think like my general like, you know, sort of temperament and potentially at times brusque nature in interacting with people. I think. But, you know, and like sort of like fast and direct and like things that most people from the South aren't.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I felt like when I got here, I was like, oh yeah, this is, I still remember when I drove up here the first time, when I still had a car And like driving in Manhattan, I was like, this is how I've always wanted to drive. It was just illegal everywhere else.
I've only driven Manhattan like, for maybe an hour of my entire life, and I'm like still traumatized from it.
Oh yeah, you just to go completely balls out. Like you're just like you just it's full on aggression and like drive. It's like Grand Theft Auto.
I've never been in a car with you, okay?
I mean, I'm better now. I've mellowed with age, but yeah. I mean, it's kind of fun. It's kind of how I'm still alive. I don't know. I should not have ever been allowed behind the wheel of a car until I was about like probably 25 or 30.
Yeah, I've had some bad accidents. And
oh, really?
Very lucky to be okay for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine. I mean, like, Florida is a fucked up place and a really horrible place to drive in sometimes, so...
Were you driving in these accidents?
Yeah.
Or,
most of the time, yes.
I was in,
two of the times, I was the reason why they happened.
Oh, man. Remind me to never drive with you.
Yeah,
well... You and I should just stay away from cars in general.
We should just be in the backseat.
Yeah.
So when Fallen Sox gets into the shows, Tarzan's or Sarge's gonna drive us.
Yes.
Maybe Lindsay.
Yeah.
I don't know if Lindsay's good with cars.
I
assume she is. I mean, she's from the South.
Yeah, I think she can drive.
Gabby, I think, told me she's not good with cars. I know Gabby's listening to this episode, too, in L.A. I'm sure she is. I assume the whole team is listening, actually. McGillivray, we'll get him back in, because he's still part of the team. He's just a hiatus.
He's a very responsible person. I'm sure he would be an excellent driver.
The way you just said was really funny, but yeah, I believe that, yeah.
I was in a car wreck in high school where my friend was driving and he flipped the car. That was the scariest.
I've never been in a flip, thank God. Knock on wood.
Yeah. But so anyway, yeah, no, I moved here and I was like, it's weird. I moved here in 1998, and I've never left. It just kind of like, I immediately felt like very at home in New York, and I think there's been times where there was a brief period where I almost considered moving to LA, because I have a lot of friends from college are all out there together.
Yeah.
And I went out and worked on a project out there. And stayed with them, like lived with some of those guys for a couple months, and I loved it. It was great, but you know, being close to my family, like being on the East Coast, like near my family and stuff, is kind of a big deal. So I was never able to like pull the trigger. But it's weird because I do feel like after a while, like after a certain number of years living in New York, it's like you're kind of spoiled for any other city. You know, there's like only a handful of other cities that you could move to after getting used to living in New York, you know? And
yeah,
I think it's like, it's kind of messed up. Cause it's like, well, I would like to, you know, I kind of would like to consider the possibility of going other places, but it's like, where would I go? You know, where would you go other than
there's not many places that are like similar.
Yeah.
Where I like the idea of living in a 24-hour city. I mean like,
yeah.
The fact that we were able to do a show last night and then go to bars or whatever afterwards till God knows when.
Yeah.
Is such a great thing. And the fact they're able to, like, the train's running and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, just from the short amount of time that I spent in LA, I mean, obviously I think it has all of the things that you would want and need as far as, like, you know, cultural and entertainment opportunities,
right.
and you know, in fact, even maybe more so. But like, just the, you know, having to drive, I don't know, I guess what you trade is you trade weather for traffic from New York to LA.
Right.
It's like these two things.
And earthquakes.
Yeah, and earthquakes. These two things that you like just can't control that like fuck up your life from time to time. It's like here it's the weather and you just gotta deal with having, you know, essentially four months of shitty weather there. Of course, that's a good point. There, traffic is year round. Weather in
New
York.
And this is why Gabby Van Horn needs to return immediately to New York.
Jeez.
Just drop out of rehearsals.
Already, will ya? Come on.
It's only been like 3 weeks.
We love you, Gabby. We miss you.
Yep.
Good luck.
Get back here.
But in all seriousness, get the fuck back to New York.
Seriously. We're going to win the Indy Cage match 3 times in a row. We expect to see you in Indy Cage match. We'll win 3 times in a row.
This whole podcast is just now turning into a direct message.
To Gabby Van Horn. Guys, everyone turn off your podcast except for Gabby Van Horn. Nah.
Okay.
So
I'm just kidding.
Sorry, no. Ahead. Should we?
Go ahead. No.
Gabby, get back. Get back.
Okay. What were you going to say?
Nah, man. Like, I mean, the one thing that terrifies me the most about, like, L.A. is, like, the idea of earthquakes. Like, that's, like, something that, like, legitimately scares me. This is coming from a guy that survived, actually survived Hurricane Katrina in a mobile home.
Oh, wow.
Cause
where were you?
I was in Florida.
In Florida?
Like, basically what happened is Katrina went through Central Florida, which is where I was in college.
Yeah.
Like, got strong, and then went north.
Right.
And it was, like, a 3 when it hit me.
Oh, wow.
So...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never... So I've only experienced earthquakes. I experienced one in San Francisco one time, and it was not pleasant, but it was not... It was very minor. It was very, you know... But, I mean, I could get used to having those kinds of things. I don't know. It doesn't... It might be the type of thing where if I were to... move out there and experience it on a regular basis, it would get to me, but to me it's like one of those things where it's like, I mean, you're just as likely to have a, you know, something blow off of a construction site top of a building in Manhattan and land on you in the street, you know, it's just like,
right.
If it's your time to go, it's your time to go,
I mean,
you know?
I have experienced an earthquake, I just did not know I was experiencing an earthquake.
Yeah.
The earthquake that happened in Virginia like 3 or 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
Right. When that happened, I was actually at work at Madame Tussauds inside the Hyatt house, talking to my coworkers, a slow day, just having a conversation like this, and then when I break it found out there was an earthquake.
Yeah.
Which happened in a terrible place because there's like lighting instruments and like a lot of like sharp objects in there.
Oh, yeah, that's scary. I didn't notice it at all. I was like other people. I was in the bathroom at my office, and I came out, and everyone was like, "Did you feel that? Did you feel that?" And I was like.
Were you pooping?
Well, I really walked right into that one, didn't I? I just kind of slow pitched that one underhand to you.
Yep.
Hey,
everyone poops even during earthquakes.
Yeah.
That could have been even worse, man. It was a.
It could have gone really bad. It could have gone really badly for me.
I know my parents are laughing right now. That's what makes me very happy.
Hi, Mr. and Mrs. Levy.
Oh God!
A lot of direct shout-outs on this podcast.
I'm okay with that.
Okay,
I'm cool. So fine with that.
Cool.
Are you fine with that?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I love it. Great fucking time, man. Okay, so who was your first teacher at UCB?
My first teacher, I had Jordan Klepper for 101.
Fuck you, man. I really wish I had Klepper at one point.
I was lucky. I had him twice, actually. I had him for 101, and I had him for my first advanced study class.
Oh, great.
Which was amazing. He was, that was a great, great class filled with, like, half the people in that class now are on, I swear to God, like, half the people in that class are now on Lloyd Knight, or Harold Knight. Dave Murray, Pat Regan, Zach Cherry, Dan McGilvery, Brandon Tarzis was in that,
Wait, Tarsus was in that?
Tarsus was in the,
Tarsus started, like, when I started.
No, this isn't, my 101, okay. This is my first advanced study class. Anyway,
yeah,
that was an amazing class, and I love Jordan Klepper. He just, I think he creates, like, a vibe in the classroom that is just so positive and so conducive to everyone, like, vibing together and getting along and being super supportive.
He's like the nicest dude.
I think, you know, we have to be positive and supportive as improvisers. Like, you know, to do improv, you have to sort of have that energy. But I think, and I'll say this, like, completely honestly about myself, I find myself having to force that a lot of times, and really? It's difficult. Yeah, because I'm just generally like a cantankerous shithead by nature. But
really?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, I feel like pretty well. I had no idea that you consider yourself that.
Oh yeah, I'm like super pessimistic. But I mean, I don't like to be, but I just am that way sometimes. But anyway, the thing that I was saying about Jordan is that like his like the positive. I mean, it sounds like so like hippy dippy, but like. Yeah. The positive vibes that he exudes, that he puts out in the world, man, it's so genuine. It's like he's so genuinely positive, and that it like it's, you know, it's like infectious, and it really just does get. I think we would do this one thing at the end of every class where we'd stand in a circle and go around, and you would say one thing that someone else did that you loved in that class.
That's cool.
And like, you know, I mean, that's the kind of thing where like, I feel like if a different teacher did that, it might feel a little bit like, I don't know, forced or something. But yeah, like yeah. With him doing it, it was just like, everyone was just like, yeah, man, like, I don't know. It was great. It was great. It was a fantastic. He's definitely far and away one of my favorite improv teachers. And I also think, you know, as someone who just kind of, like, stumbled into improv, I think if I had, you know, if I had not had him as, like, that been my first encounter, like, if that had not been, like, the way that I first encountered improv, I don't know if I would have necessarily stuck with it or kept doing it.
No, I should understand that. Like, my first teacher was John Gabris,
mm-hmm.
who was, like, the most positive human being in the world and also one of the most talented, crazy men out there. I mean, I love listening to my Comedy Bang Bang and stuff like that. Like, I will always listen to every Comedy Bang Bang he's on.
Yeah.
And I don't listen to every Comedy Bang Bang. I like Comedy Bang Bang, but I feel like half of them, like, don't really need. Granted, it's a twice-a-week podcast. It's 3 hours. That's, like, almost 2 hours long every time.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, like, he is so great, so positive. Like, it made me want to continue at UCB.
Yeah, totally.
So much more that even after some bad experiences in the next level, I stuck through. So.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I mean, I wish that, I mean, it's weird. It's weird how, you know, people have, you want everyone to have all the success in the world, but at the same time, it's like, there's the constant, you know, it's like, but then there's people constantly like rising up and like yeah. filling in, you know, rising up. To the
I mean, Joanna Bradley is someone that I don't think I have any more respect for than I do.
She's amazing. She's,
like, yeah. Like what she's done for Fallen Socks.
Yeah.
Is so huge.
My favorite thing, about Joanna is that, I feel like her notes are like, they're like judo. It's like, oh, like you're getting your ass kicked. This thing isn't working. Just shift your weight like this yeah. much in this direction. Just do like make these two like tiny little adjustments, and then like now you're flipping your opponent
yeah.
over your head with ease. And whereas before you were falling on your ass. And she's so, yeah, she's like just, I don't know, her notes are like so perfect. And she was the same way, I took her Character 101 class, and she was the same way in that class, where it's just like, yeah, everything you're doing is great, just maybe
frown once.
yeah. And it's like, you make those adjustments, and it's like, oh, this sort of half-baked idea that I had is now like fully coming together. She's amazing. She's one of my favorite
people. Like I just love like how like, I didn't realize how good of a coach she was until like 2 hours into our first Fallen Socks practice.
Yeah,
like because I'm like, she's just giving us like positive notes. I'm like, oh wait, they're just like really positive, like really really specific at the same time.
Yeah.
Like I've had like coaches who are like, yeah, great job,
right?
That's it. Yeah, great job,
right?
Okay, here's $20.
Yeah, no, she's fantastic, and just a generally lovely, wonderful human being yeah. to boot. I really like her.
I really hope that once we get our practices back going up and running soon, that she'll be able to coach us again.
Yeah.
If definitely. Not, no worries. Jeremy Bent's also a great substitute coach.
Yeah.
Who's also one of my personal favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. So Centaur, like, started as a practice group, or?
Yep, we started as a practice group in 201. And yeah, I don't know. I think, I don't know, we were practicing at the time. I was on also on another team that's long since defunct called Dig Dig Dig. And then that was myself and Dan McGilvery and Malin Von Euler Hogan and Carly McElroy and Ali Vingiano. We were all in 101 together in that Jordan Klepper 101 class. And so we had that team kind of going, and Chris Scott was our coach. And
who is also a personal favorite of mine,
he's
too.
He's a great,
he
great
was
a, coach.
He was the official sub for Flint.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And so that, yeah, we had that team going, and like, I mean, we were only in 201, but we were like, you know, we were all like super gung-ho and just like, you know, getting out and doing shows and stuff. And then when that team kind of, broke up, we had this practice group going, from Nicole's class, and that group kind of like gelled and became Centaur. Yeah.
It's funny, because I feel like everyone seems like you put together Dan McGilvery's in it.
He and I, well, yeah, he and I are, like, good buddies and, like, have known each other for a really long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he was the first person that I met in my first day of 101. So we've done a lot of stuff together. We still have not yet performed together as Dan Patrick, which is him, myself, and if we can get him... Dan Patrick. He's yet to show up to one of our shows.
God, that's really funny.
We're gonna keep trying.
Dan Patrick, if you're listening out there, so you have to come out.
Maybe that can be your celebrity guest for 200. You can have him on, and Dan and I will come on.
Oh, that's daunting, but I would love to have you back on, and I think you'd be interesting to have McGilvery on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want McGilvery on the show.
Yeah, man.
Hell, I've had almost half a fall. Well, kind of myself, I've had half a fallen ox. All I need is, I've had you, I've had Gabby, I've had Dan,
nice.
I've had myself. Well, Dan Sargent.
Yeah.
And all I need is Brandon Tarzis, who's someone I asked maybe 2 years ago to do this podcast. He said, yeah, just our schedules have never worked out. Because,
yeah.
And then, of course, Lindsay Bowling and McGillivray.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And then, of course, it gets those, like,
them all.
Yeah. Collect them all. Put a little cage.
That's a frightening image. Just like the...
all 191 guests just in little cages.
Is it like you're going to like open... Like after this podcast is over, are you going to lead me like down a hallway and I'm going to like shrink and I'm going to get back there and there's... And like so the whole... all everyone who's ever been on your podcast is like in some little... like glass jar back there.
That Bobby Moynihan that you see on SNL, that's the Shears Tomato you see on SNL. They actually just do it from upstairs in the little closet I have.
Yeah. You're not like creating doppelgangers to go back out and inhabit the world.
Yeah, I mean, this is the saddest part of the whole thing. The Chelsea Clark did escape, and Brandon Gardner did escape.
Oh man. Well. That makes me feel good because if I had paid money to take a class with Brandon Gardner and it was actually his doppelganger, which I did, I'd feel a little cheated that I.
Well, I mean,
you know,
I was really happy they got out because I was in a Brandon Gardner ESP this past fall. So
nice.
If I had his doppelganger too, and you know, I have a little Brandon Gardner like tucked away in my closet upstairs. That'd be pretty bad. It would also be really awkward to have an ASP taught in my apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be a little cramped.
And then, of course, like the people wanting to get out. We should stop this bit.
It's getting really weird.
Yeah.
It's getting weird
for us, which is weird. for those that don't know, 8 days ago, our set evolved the Country Bear Jamboree being reanimated by the souls of Walt Disney.
Yes.
And they were taking on all the bad characteristics of Walt Disney.
That was, yeah.
That was fun, though.
That was fun.
We talked about it. We didn't see it, which is okay. In the context of that set, that's fine.
Can I tell you about my dream last night?
Sure,
Mark?
Dude.
Can I tell you? No, I'm just kidding.
Do it. I don't care.
No, no. I'm joking because I said earlier that talking about improv sets.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So get ready to wrap up. Get ready to wrap up. Let's talk about Patrick Grizzard that people might not know that you're okay sharing.
Something about me that people might not know. Boy, I don't know. That's tough. I mean, as I said, like, I think people are always surprised when I tell people that I am 41 years old.
You don't look, you know, acting. Granted, I don't even know what that even means at this point. But you're pretty fucking cool and hip.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Well, I think, yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's like, it was something that I was super self-conscious about when I first started, and I would talk about it like too much. And I think, you know, at some point somebody was like, the only person that cares about this is you. And I was, and it like finally hit me that I was like, oh yeah, that's definitely true. And it's weird. I talk about this a lot with my dad, just about like how it's kind of weird to like find the thing that you feel like you're, you know, sort of always meant to do, like to not find that thing until you're in your late 30s is like, it's, you know, it's like, on the one hand, it's like you're grateful that you found it. On the other hand, it's like, oh, man, I was living in New York in 1998, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't I have just stumbled into into a class at UCB then? But, you know, I mean, the thing is like, had I done that then, honestly, I probably would have been like, oh, this isn't for me. Or, because I, you know what I mean? Like, I
stumble onto things you're supposed to stumble onto.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I went to UCB, like, I wanted to go to UCB, but I was like, I'm like, yeah, this is going to be for my resume.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to take a 101, maybe a 201 for my resume, and then like, I'm like, no, I'm actually pretty happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my sort of rationalization is that I always tell myself, well, you know, had I not had the experience of going to grad school, one of the things that I found out in grad school is that I am by nature not a good collaborator, you know?
Which,
like,
is hilarious because you do improv. And you're making me a little scared about the thing that I want to do with you, so.
Well, I think I've become of that. I think I had to have that experience to have the insight that I wasn't by nature a good collaborator, and so it's something that I've worked on and become. It's not that I'm not a good collaborator. It's like, but like, you know, I think until I went to grad school, I had this idea that, like, I just want to, like, work. I want to be one of those people that can do everything,
yeah.
You know? And, like, having the realization that, A, I'm not one of those people that can do everything, and, B, that when you work with people that have other skills that complement yours, you are frequently going to be able to create something that's, you know, a great, you know, exponentially better in quality, and you create things that you wouldn't otherwise be able to create. So I you know, I had to go to grad school, and I, you know, spend 10 years in between starting and then going back and finishing and all that stuff in order to get to the point where I could then go and do improv and do comedy.
Well,
successfully.
You're very funny. I really enjoy being on two teams with you. I'm so serious about that. Like,
thanks, man. Thank
it makes
you.
Me really happy to play with you, dude.
Well, likewise, always.
Thank
always.
You.
Well, and yeah, I mean, I'm glad we were able to finally do this.
I just find it, like, so funny that like we were talking about like we became friends like pretty quickly, and then like we're like, yeah, let's do some two prod here sometime. And then like you like brought this idea, like, it'd be really fun to have like a really serious practice group that's like all good players, and became Fallen Socks. And,
yeah.
And it's still going good. We're
yeah,
not
man.
Practicing right now, but that doesn't mean we're not doing good.
Yeah, well, we're doing shows.
I mean,
shows
when we get to place, we'll talk about the shows. We have at least one show coming up I can think of right now.
I think that's right.
We were going to have one tonight that I was really excited about, but I got canceled.
Yeah, the fourth.
I don't want to talk about that show much more, actually.
Okay, that's fine.
Cool. Okay, what about things looking forward to coming up that don't involve you?
What's that?
What about things that are coming up that you're looking forward to that don't involve you? Like a movie, a TV show, a play?
Well, I will say something that I just did that was amazing and everyone should go see it is Hand to God.
I need to see that show.
Oh my God. It is insanely good. It is the... I will probably get shit for this, but I think it is like Book of Mormon good. I mean, it's not a musical, but it's like that level of funniness and darkness. I don't see a ton of theater. I see a couple plays a year probably, but I had no idea what I was walking into. It's so insanely good. Everyone should go see Hand to God. I don't know what else is like coming up. I mean, I guess we're like about to hit like summer blockbuster season. Yeah. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of
this
like,
week Age
Avengers.
Voltron comes out.
Oh, this week?
Well, May 1st.
May? Golly. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I really want to see is the Fun Home.
Yes.
Bechdel,
I want to see that, yeah.
Adaptation of her comic, which I've only read about half of it. I was in, Forbidden Planet.
Yeah.
I just stumbled across it in there the other day, and it's like absolutely riveting. It's so good. I picked it up, and like before I realized it, I had like killed 20 minutes just like I read the first like first half of it or something. But that looks amazing.
Yeah, one of my favorite actors is in it too.
Who's that?
Michael Cerveris.
Okay, I don't know him.
He I like fell for him hard when on my like one of my first trips to New York before moving up here. I saw him in Assassins, the 2004 revival.
Okay.
And he's incredible. Like, I've seen him in Sweeney Todd. I've seen him in a lot of great things. And
nice.
Apparently, he's really good in that show, so.
Nice. I don't know. What else? I'm excited to go to Lloyd Night this week and see the new teams. Big ups to Dave Murray and Dan McGilvery and all the new folks on
Big Time.
Yeah. I'm excited to go see my friend Allison is in a short play I'm going to go to this week. So cool. Yeah, I don't know, lots of fun nice. Stuff on the horizon.
And what about plugs for your Twitter, Tumblr shows?
My Twitter, man,
you're good at Twitter.
I'm not prolific. I get a few out every now and then, but it's Pneumatic at Pneumatic, GNEUMATIC, and show plugs.
Yeah, sure.
I think we've got so there's the
Improv Bingo,
and
Indie Cage Match,
Indie Cage Match, What else? I'm doing like more character stuff as well, but I don't have anything. I'm trying to think. I don't think I have anything specifically planned. But yeah, if you're looking to have somebody do characters at your shows, hit me up. I would love to do your show and put up a character. I think that's about it.
Cool. My plug's quickly at MarkLevy5. If you want to email the show, hchampod@gmail.com. As he said, Indie Cage Match, Fallen Sox is in at 6:30 tomorrow night? Tuesday, right? It's Tuesday, the 28th. Yeah. Tuesday the 28th at 6:30 p.m. at Chill Crown. Please come out. Fallen Sox, watch your love and watch your votes. And if we get 3 wins, we can get to Indie Cage Match quicker.
Oh, yeah.
If not, we'll get there in, like, November-ish.
Yeah.
Which is fine. because it will be even that much better of a team and that much more well-known. Which
Hell
is
yeah.
cool, too. Another thing, also, as we mentioned earlier, Improv Bingo will be this Wednesday night at 11 p.m. at the Treehouse Theater, 154 West 29th Street. $1 tickets, drinks, or a drink will get you in. They'll give you a bingo card. You can win a prize. Teams that are being performing, Centaur, Hussein, Umbrella Man, and characters are being done by Manolo Moreno, Scott Friedstein, and Leah Spiegelman. Great, great people. It's going to be a really fun show. We're doing this at least two more times, but this is going to be a really fucking bizarre, fun show. Having a lot of fun playing that. Also, might as well plug Farmers in the Bucket, which I'm very excited about this month's one, coming up on May 7th. Also at 11 p.m. at the Treehouse Theater, $1 or a drink. And that's going to be with teams Hussein again. Yeah, having them in two shows. I'm producing a recently ended Harold team that I love, Apollo, and less recent but still love this fucking team, because the Harold team rocks. And nice. On May 9th, I am in Dumnatch, I think that's how you say it. Nick Vitale's industry showcase at the Treehouse, which I'm very, very excited about.
Dope.
I think that's at 8 p.m. It's a Saturday at $5. I will get better information on that, and also I'll be in a telephone show coming up around May.
Nice.
Patrick, this has been so much fun.
Likewise, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. Thank you. And I'll see you guys next time at the Mark.